Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This week's episode of Screen Talk is sponsored by HBO Max, presenting Hacks. Nominated for 15 Emmys, including Outstanding Comedy Series and Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for Jean Smart. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. Although when I say as always, of course, we have to acknowledge that I was on vacation last week. You had our pal Tom Brueggemann on to talk about box office stuff. And then I was going to have a guest this week, but you decided to stick around. So great to have you, Ann. I'm so glad that we can do this before Telluride.
Now is not the time to go away. I've got a screening queue a mile long in my inbox, and I've got screenings to actually go to out in the real world, quite a few. And
vacation is important, but it is good that you had that eureka moment.
Later. I'll take. No, they had timed our time off in front of going back to the office and postponed going back to the office. So
yeah, like many people. So in spite of all that, we are certainly out in the world. We're going to screenings. We're seeing stuff. We can't talk about all the stuff we're seeing yet, but next week we're going to be in Telluride. So this is sort of the big buildup to that, is everybody figuring out, well, what can we see in advance? What are we going to see on the ground? So that much at least feels familiar, is that hustle. It'll be fascinating to see what it's like on the ground at Telluride. Obviously, since our initial conversation about safety protocol, it's evolved. We're going to be doing the testing thing just like Cannes.
We're old pros, Eric.
They'll have a site. And wearing masks and all that stuff. But we'll be in Telluride watching movies, which is super exciting. And I'm really happy that's happening.
No, I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, outdoor venues and so on. But the thing I will say, you and I are already juggling this. There are a lot of people going to Telluride, a lot of talent. And usually you do run around a bit, hustling interviews on the fly, because everybody doesn't know the schedule ahead of time.
And
the publicists are tearing their hair out because they literally don't know when their films are going to show. And we, you know, I'm used to it. I just run and gun and, you know, show up where I can, you know, to do my interviews, but there's going to be more of them this year.
Yeah, Telluride trolls all of us in the sense that it's like, even as we know certain things based on what we know, you can't know everything, and you can't know exactly how that weekend's going to come together until the last minute. And so we're all kind of in it together with PR people saying, we think you can maybe do this or that. And I think it's going to be fascinating for the celebrities who are going as well, because obviously for a lot of them, that kind of up close kind of hustle of doing a bunch of interviews and stuff, they haven't had to do that in a while. This is not a bunch of Zooms. You're going to be walking around this mountain town, taking the gondolas and watching movies.
So, I have heard people say they don't want to take the gondolas. My attitude is,
wow, it's too much time. Otherwise,
if you've got a mask, you know, that's going to,
and we're getting tested,
be enough, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about mitigating risk. There's risk in a lot of different ways here, but this is about mitigating risk. So before we get deeper into that, though, we should talk about the other news cycle this week, which was CinemaCon, which, even though we didn't have people on the ground, did happen at Caesar's Palace per usual. And we followed from afar. You tuned in for the big conversation with the NATO folks, who basically said day and date is a terrible idea and end of discussion. So, well, nothing, you know, new there.
You know, I really did tune in. Actually, there was a great podcast that the guys from Box Office did, Daniel Luria,
our old intern.
That's right. He's really good.
Gone a long way.
And he and the editor, executive editor of Box Office, did do a daily podcast running down absolutely everything. And I did tune in, thanks to our friend Sperling Reich. I tuned into the
our old roommate.
Yeah.
What a network.
He recorded the round table for me, and I got all the good scoop there. And there were some great panels that I actually got recordings of as well. So basically, the takeaway is that the industry survived. Yes, the studios leaned into streaming, but the bad news, what you were referring to with Day and Date, the reason that they're so upset about Day and Date, and the studios are going to listen to this too, it's hurting them as well. There was an example of several examples of movies that actually had real percentages of how many people. What it was something that a woman with an enormous following in Mexico on Twitter or social media, some following or other, had did a poll, and so all these people told presumably told the truth about where they saw a particular movie, mm-hmm. and the percentages of where they saw them in theaters, whether they saw them online, most of them saw them from piracy.
No shocker there. If you make big movies available that way, people are going to do what they do. That's
so they get pristine copies instantly now if it goes out Day and Date. And it's really like thousands of them go out. So this is also bad for the streamers. This is bad for everybody. So I think there's going to be a reckoning that might bring exclusives back for, I think the 45 days is going to be.
Yeah, because they did get piracy under control. This is an industry that was very responsive, whatever it was, decade, 15 years ago.
Under control is a question, but this
is... Well, more than now. I mean...
This isn't good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was one of them. One of the things I took away. The other is that while we were hearing sort of dire predictions of how many theaters would go out of business during the pandemic, at the end of the pandemic, it turned out to be 1,000 theaters out of 43,000, leaving 42,000. Now, that doesn't mean there couldn't be more attrition down the line, but thanks to the government, thanks to people, furloughed people and people laid off and all sorts of other help that came from the government and a lot of lobbying to keep support for the mom and pop theaters, especially, they survived. And a lot of the art houses survived. So it's really not as bad as everybody thought.
I think the art house survival is the one factor that should be the least surprising from my perspective, because as I said, I think relatively early on in all this, they're the ones that, at least a lot of them, are scrappy. Their margins are different. You know, they celebrate. I've seen celebrations at Art House Convergence of being in the black by, you know, $100,000 or whatever. And I think what's sort of heartening about that is that, you know, hopefully that kind of nimbleness is truly what makes exhibition an exciting space in the first place, is people who can try things outside the box. And they've been doing that forever.
Actually brought art houses and nonprofits into its tent. And so right before the pandemic, and they were able to get support, which was really helpful for them. So I didn't know that there was so much support going to the art houses, and I'm glad to hear it. The adult market, though, for sophisticated specialty fare has not come back yet, Eric. I mean, they need movies. They need people to show up for them to stay in business.
Well, so we're looking at a promising fall. Yeah.
We have to see how that goes, because, yes, you know, maybe the Roadrunner movie did okay, or, but something like Summer of Soul was a bit of a disappointment. And there were others that were expected to do better than they did. Stillwater did okay.
Yeah. You could argue that, I mean, is that a specialty release really? I mean, it was,
they're all doing wide releases now. Part of what has to happen,
it's relative,
is that the platforms have to come back. You know, the old models need to return in terms of long running theater art houses.
So bottom line, I mean, this is a moving target. And as we go into the fall season and see a whole bunch of movies, what's going to be fascinating to talk about is, are these movies going to be facing the same kind of marketplace challenge that, say, a Stillwater or Summer of Soul did in recent months? Or is it going to be different? Are people, you know, getting their booster shots in September and feeling better about going to movies? And with all this buzz around a handful of strong titles from the fall festival circuit, going to actually feel like, hey, maybe now is the time that I can do something I didn't feel like doing over the summer?
The other thing I learned, which I found fascinating, again, from Alejandro Ramirez of Cinepolis. He's the chief of the very vibrant global theater chain based in Mexico. he really laid out the numbers. If you are in a movie theater looking forward, silent, with a mask on, you know, not moving around in a big theater with circulating air, you're safer than just about any other out of the home destination. If you're sitting around a table with people talking to them in a restaurant,
they're throwing viral droplets at you.
If you're in a synagogue, if you're singing, if you're at a sports event and you're yelling, you know, all of all those particles are 50, you know, 90 times what it would be in a movie theater if you're at a sporting event. I'm going to a baseball game on Monday. Maybe
I've been to a Yankees game. I went to a Mets game. I went to Wilco a week ago.
Kept your mask on, or were you outdoors?
It was outside of Forest Hills. In fact, it was the night before our supposed hurricane that didn't really happen here in New York. And we got rained on. So it was a great show in the rain. As you can imagine, it was like very surreal just to be there. But having all those experiences, and then also having done a big media event like Cannes, I mean, you know that it's possible to do this stuff and recognize that there's risk around you, but you've mitigated it because thankfully you're vaccinated, and holy crap, get your ass vaccinated if you're not. But like places in New York, I mean, to go to dinner in New York now, you have to show your proof of vaccination. So
you mean indoors?
Indoors, yeah. Well, even just to dine there.
Dinner,
yeah.
Indoors.
Well, even just to dine there, you have to show a lot of places now. Include a place I went to where I dined outside last night. I had to do that. So really? It's evolving.
I don't do that here. I don't think.
Well, I think everyone's kind of sorting out the rules in their own kind of way, but it's not a bad idea to do that. Because even outside you can wind up in congregate settings. So
absolutely.
We'll see how all that,
The question is how they message it, really. Yep. Cause I don't think most people recognize this. I don't think this is a message they've gotten out that it's really safe.
Well, one step at a time, we'll just have to keep talking about it on Screen Talk and
that's going to have a huge impact.
It'll have a huge, all moviegoers will be like, well, if Eric and Ann can do it, then certainly. So we've been seeing a lot of movies. And though we can't talk about all of them, I can mention two interviews that I did this past week for films that are upcoming because, you know, obviously I saw them. I did these interviews. Wouldn't do the interview without seeing it. And I can tell you a bit about those, both of which are obviously making the rounds at festivals. One is Paolo Sorrentino's new film, The Hand of God, which is a Netflix title.
And it's a likely Italian
Oscar submission.
Given that the Moretti didn't do well at Cannes.
Yeah, so I think this film is going to really get people talking, not necessarily in the way that a lot of his work does. I mean, obviously, the new Pope, the young Pope on HBO, that was like a big thing. But the story, if you're a cinephile and you've been aware of Paolo Sorrentino as a filmmaker in the past, you know, he won the Oscar for The Great Beauty, obviously. I think you'll find what's quite striking about this is that it's his personal story, and it's very well made, but it takes his style, which tends to be very Fellini-esque, a lot of, you know, lavish surfaces, and it directs it towards this more intimate story, which is that when he was a teenager, both of his parents died of carbon monoxide poisoning while he was at a soccer game seeing Diego Maradona. So Diego Maradona, obviously the hand of God, that's a reference to you know, what he referred to as when he scored a goal. So it's a shocking story, obviously, but it's really about when that happened, what happened next, and his path to filmmaking as a result of that. So it's really remarkable.
It's a little
in the
bit
sense
like the Pedro Almodóvar.
Yeah, Pedro, or even you could say something like Roma. In the sense, it's a filmmaker of a certain stature finally realizing that they have the skill set and the confidence to tell that personal story. And so you see the piece I wrote, basically that's what he's talking about. He turned 50 last year during the pandemic, and he felt like at this turning point in his life, he was ready to do this. And they shot it during the pandemic. It was the first time a lot of these people were outside in Italy after the first lockdown. So it's got this really specific kind of component to it. And I'm just curious to see how people respond to it, because it is a small, intimate movie. It's certainly by his standards, but Netflix is putting resources into it. So I think it will get some attention. The other film I did an interview for was The Card Counter, which is a new film from Paul Schrader, his first since First Reformed. Now, you know, Paul, obviously someone that we know well, or a fascinating character, you know, at 75, still making movies within an inch of his life.
We had fun dinner, but
we have had some fun times with him. And this movie with Oscar Isaac as a gambler, and he's basically this Abu Ghraib that trying to stop a kid played by Tay Sheridan from committing a violent act, is in some ways so consistent with what Schrader does and has done ever since his script for Taxi Driver, which is double down on these sort of guilt-stricken or lonely men who feel like somehow the system has abandoned them and they have to take justice into their hands. And obviously it goes awry in all kinds of different ways. But you know, I don't expect it necessarily to make the same kind of noise as First Reformed in the sense that you had in that movie, one, an Ethan Hawke performance that was like one of the great things he's done, but also it was a really wild film. I think this is a more contained drama, but
of a genre film though?
I wouldn't put it in that category necessarily. The thing about Schrader as a writer and a storyteller is that there's a lot of misdirection. You think you know what this movie is and it'll take you in some other directions.
It's always good.
And so you've got a great Oscar Isaac performance. That's a no-brainer. You've also got Tiffany Haddish as this woman who kind of becomes his poker agent in a way, doing something dramatic, which is fascinating. And there's a great interview with her in the Times. Well, she's quite good. In the Times, she talks about how Schrader kind of had to talk her out of comedic sing-song, and you could see it in the movie. It's like you recognize it's Tiffany Haddish, but if you close your eyes and listen, you wouldn't necessarily realize it's Tiffany Haddish, which I think is kind of fascinating.
Wondering if contained Tiffany Haddish is good Tiffany Haddish.
Well, remember that Paul Thomas Anderson really wanted to work with her. And she has done some dramatic stuff that hasn't really resonated more broadly. But by and large, you know, she's somebody who is leaning hard into her comedic persona and all the stuff she does, including that Netflix series that she hosts, which I really enjoy. But it's nice to see her try something different and come out on the other side in good shape. So I think this will be a good sort of test for certain audiences. It's Focus Features, you know, they're putting it out before New York Film Festival, so it's not the kind of thing that's going to continue to drive buzz throughout the season. But it is a mature 2-hour drama. So it's for a certain audience that wants that experience.
I look forward. I've seen a ton of things I'm not allowed to talk about.
Next week will be much more robust. Yeah,
you're carrying the launch stories for these films,
which I love to do because, I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, after a while, a lot of the talent gets sick of telling the same story over and over.
It's so fun to be at the beginning. No question. This is what I love about interviewing people at Telluride.
Yeah, you help them work through it in a way because nobody really knows how to message what they created.
Exactly.
So that'll be fun as we keep doing that.
I remember doing the very first Danny Boyle interview for Slumdog Millionaire. At Telluride. Or the very first Jason Reitman interview for Up in the Air. You know, that's really fun because they haven't talked about it before.
Right. Yeah. No, it's fun and it's meaningful because, you know, they're trying to be careful about it. Whereas when you talk to somebody further down the line, you can probably Google certain things they're saying and
don't have to use.
I get in the habit of interrupting people and being like, yeah, I saw that you said that to 5 other people, but what I'm really asking is this. So pro tip. But yeah, you did talk to Sean and Dylan Penn, which goes back to something we were talking about earlier, which is how movies are performing. Flag Day was obviously not a big theatrical hit, but I thought you did a good combo.
I saw it again, and I would never have predicted that it would do well theatrically. I hope it does better at home. The story actually got read, so maybe there is some interest in it at home. But he really was reluctant to make this movie with, but he wanted to help her. He wanted to direct his daughter. And finally, Matt Damon sort of yelled at him and said, what are you, you know, I think Casey Affleck was supposed to do it and dropped out. And he was turning to Matt Damon like a month before the movie was supposed to start filming. And Damon said, what are you thinking? This is an opportunity for you to act opposite your daughter. Go for
embrace it,
dude.
Yeah.
You know, don't, you know, yelled at him. And finally, Sean gave, you know, went for it. And what is best in the movie, which is has not gotten good reviews, and I absolutely understand why, it really is the best stuff is between the father and the daughter. They're
actually
really electric together.
I liked it more than I did.
Actually.
I liked a lot about them. I was surprised. But, well, look, I think it's unfair I mean, Sean Penn faced an unfair narrative at Cannes this year, which was that, oh, his last movie was a huge embarrassment, which is The Last Face. Yeah, that movie was terrible. And then they didn't even have a finished version when they went there. But remember, you know, he's made
that
good movies.
That is the rule that all filmmakers should remember to follow. Do not show a work in progress.
Get that shit done or like more or less done.
There are a whole lot of examples of people who've done that and come out on the wrong side.
And let's remember, so a lot of people are fans of Into the Wild. That movie has gained more fans
very
with time.
Good film.
And
very
I think this movie in certain ways has
Indian
a
Runner
kinship.
Was good too.
But I think this movie has a certain kinship with Into the Wild in the sense that Dylan Penn's character, her performance is outstanding, but Dylan Penn's character, the kind of journey that she goes on to try to cut herself loose from the specter of, you know, her upbringing, which was sort of, you know, let her down in a lot of ways.
Father lets her down. Yes.
And she goes on the road and you get these musical montages and so forth of her kind of journeying to find her sense of self.
Based on a memoir.
Yeah, and like Into the Wild, which was too, it was based on a true story as well.
A real nonfiction book.
Yeah. So I think there is a kinship thematically there that I thought was striking and very well done in certain key moments. It's worth seeing. And man, like when I was watching her, I was thinking, you know, I don't know exactly, I can't relate to what it's like to grow up in an actor household, and I'm sure it's daunting in certain ways, but she does really convey a kind of talent that's not just like, oh, she's just, you know, doing her dad's thing. I mean, she's a very
I loved the story that she told, that where she said that she spoke to her mother, Robin Wright, obviously a major actor as well, who basically said that working with Sean Penn as an actor was one of the most extraordinary things she'd ever experienced. So the daughter basically said, if my mother can do it,
yeah, right,
I might as well give it a go.
Yeah, it's like, don't forget, like, yeah, he's your dad, but he's also a good actor, so, and he's got a lot of stories, so embrace that and then move on and work with other people. So I look forward to seeing her in other things. So in the meantime, we're looking ahead to a bunch of other stuff. We talked about Telluride. There's also Toronto. Sadly, we won't be physically present. That's also true for a lot of people.
Of people have made the same decision, and it's interesting. I made the assumption that the digital version of Toronto, the virtual version, was going to be the hybrid options available to me would be equivalent to the ones that were available last year. I made that assumption foolishly, I think. But on the other hand, you and I are fortunate. We have relationships with distributors and publicists who will make these films available to us, but they are not necessarily being made available to the press.
I think what's fascinating here, and I brought this up before, is that it's clearly not Toronto just saying, we will not be super accessible.
A lot of people are accusing Toronto of making
that's
that
wrong.
Call.
They don't know what they're talking about.
It's very obvious.
It's distributors, you know, they want a certain kind of exclusivity and making
or
things available.
They want the movie to play in theaters and they don't want, but they're going to show it to us in screening rooms anyway. So it's a silly thing to me.
Well, but also there's a whole complex universe out there of the logic of virtual screenings, right? Like there's a certain number of screenings you can allow on a platform or that you choose to allow. So it's, you end up getting into this weird kind of game where it's like, so you're going to let 20 people screen in or 30, 50. And the thing that's unfortunate is that, you know, the most valuable thing about P&Is at a festival like Toronto is that it's like a fire hose, right? You can have a whole bunch of audience from including members of the press from big publications, small publications, all watch this movie at once. And then you just get a ton of reactions to it. And now it's going to be a lot fragmented.
For example, right after Joker won at Venice, right, there was a screening, a P&I screening in Toronto where it was one of the big rooms. And it was packed with everyone from Nola Dargis to every little tiny art house distributor to every member of the fan press. It was everybody and their mother that was at that festival crammed in that room checking out Joker. And it was fantastic. It was one of the great screenings.
Yeah. So it'll be, I mean, they will have screenings of major movies. Dune will have its IMAX screening and so forth. So we'll see some of that kind of response. It's just not going to be quite the same sort of robust thing. Having said that, I mean, I think if I wasn't acknowledging that I'm not going to be on the ground in Toronto on this podcast that people might see my coverage and think that I'm there. And the same for
I'm
you.
I'm doing a so lot of coverage.
We'll be all over it. And then I expect
I'm going to go
will.
To New York. I am going to go.
Very happy
New York,
to have you there.
So I will see you there.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild couple of weeks, no matter what. I mean,
are we doing a live podcast?
Well, we could just do it in my house or something if you want and see who shows up. But I don't know if I want to give out my address here. So, but we're talking about it. We're trying to figure out some things. So hopefully that does happen. But next week is going to be wild because we'll be on the ground in the mountains of Colorado and hopefully gasping for air in a way that allows us to adjust quickly enough because we're going to have so much that we have to do there.
Well, we may not be spending as much time late night imbibing in bars. This isn't going to happen.
Is that a bad thing, though? I haven't. The jury's still out on that one. We can do virtual shots from our hotel room.
I guess you can go to the Sheraton, put on your mask, order a drink at the bar, and go drink it outside.
Yeah, exactly.
I bet that's what they do. That's what's going to happen.
If they don't do it, we'll get it going. And then it'll have to be a new ritual from then on. Everyone has to drink in the streets at Telluride to keep the memory alive. But in any case, Anne, safe travels. I have to go a little bit further than you to get out there, but I'm looking forward to being on the ground and once again seeing you in person, which is the way it has to be. So see you soon.
See you later. Bye-bye. Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.